Leonard, literally heading back east.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are
East-West Audio Body Shop.
Well, I had a great week out here in the West, but got to go back 100 virtual degrees back to Buffalo. But we have a great guest coming up this Monday night. You do not want to miss our good friend, J. Michael Collins. He's an international voiceover guy. He's all over the world. And we're going to talk a little bit about the myriad of ways to market yourself as a voice actor, especially with online casting.
And I'll be here to answer your questions. Send them in to ewebshop@gmail.com so you can knock me off my soapbox and talk about what you want to talk about. And if you've got news stories for us, also send those in.
And I'll have a tip of the week that is kind of unusual. We'll talk about shelves. I guess you'll have to tune in to find out. That's East West Audio Body Shop, 9 o'clock in the East.
And 6 o'clock in the West.
And join us in the chat room. We'll see all of you there.
He's the home voiceover studio engineer to the stars in Los Angeles, California. A Virginia Tech grad whose knowledge of the latest recording gear is second to none.
He's a voice actor and a home studio master hailing from Buffalo, New York. His home studio skills and knowledge of voiceover recording is unmatched.
When Dan and George talk shop, people listen. And the talk continues tonight.
Welcome to East West Audio Body Shop.
Episode 178 of East West Audio Body Shop is brought to you by
Edge Studio, providers of voiceover education, production, and technology.
Harlan Hogan's Voiceover Essentials, products hand-picked for voice actors.
VoiceZam, a totally unreal demo player for voiceover professionals.
The Home Studio Master, get a handle on your professional voiceover studio.
And VoiceOver Extra, your one-stop resource for voiceover success.
And now, live from his high-tech facility in Santa Monica
and his penthouse studio in Buffalo,
here are George Whittam
and Dan Leonard.
Good evening. I'm Dan Leonard, freezing his tuchus off in the East.
And I'm George Whittam, comfortably warm in the West.
And together we are East West Audio Body Shop. My goodness, there's 3.5 feet of snow out there. It's like it just keeps piling up. I cannot wait to move to Southern California.
Well, but you know, here you can drive to the snow.
I can drive to the snow? Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. I saw there was snow up at Mammoth.
Yeah, it's just a bit of a drive.
Yeah.
But anyway, we digress.
Time now to take a look at the news. EWAB's News.
And in the news tonight, sad news, unfortunately, to report off the top. For a fun show, we hate to report these things. Gary Owens, the droll, mellifluous voiced announcer on Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In and a familiar part of radio, TV, and movies for more than 6 decades, has passed away at the age of 80. Now, Owens hosted thousands of radio programs in his long career, appeared in more than a dozen movies and on scores of TV shows, including Lucille Ball and Bob Hope specials. Most of the people I hear wouldn't remember those if they tried. He also voiced hundreds of animated characters and did a part of dozens of comedy albums and wrote books. My personal favorite character, though, of all time, was Roger Ramjet, which nobody seems to remember, but it was great political satire from the early 60s. On Laugh-In between 1968 and 1973, starring Dan Rowan and Dick Martin, Owens was shown on camera in a parody of an old school announcer with his hand cupped firmly over his ear, but his voice was always the real thing, rich and authoritative, one of the greats in our industry, and he will be sorely missed.
Indeed. Wow. It sounds like, the biggest voice talent that I ever got to know well was Don, but it sounded like this fellow was just as influential and well-loved as Don was. So
yeah, absolutely.
A lot of people are missing him. A couple quickies. Pro Tools first. And you know how we feel about Pro Tools. We talk about all the alternatives to Pro Tools on the show, but they are coming out with a entryway into using Pro Tools called Pro Tools First that's going to be a completely free, or at least to get started, totally free version of Pro Tools. It's basically going to be a freemium model, if you've ever heard that before. Basically, what freemium means, it's totally free to get started, like many of the apps you download on your phone. And then you find out if you want to get further in the game, there's in-app purchases. Well, that's how Pro Tools First is going to work. So you'll be able to use the basics. You'll be able to multi-track record. You'll be able to edit. You'll even be able to bounce offline, which is a pretty big deal that they finally introduced in Pro Tools 11. All these things will be available to you, but you'll start with just three projects that you'll have to work with. And then if you want to have more, then you actually have to pony up. And what that fee is going to be for more projects, we don't know. It's still very early days. But as soon as it comes out, I'll definitely be testing it out. I'll probably do a full video on it in Widom's World, of course, and let you know my report. But, you know, it could be a great alternative for someone looking for Pro Tools compatibility, someone who wants to learn Pro Tools. If you're working for a picky audiobook producer that says you must use Pro Tools, this could be a nice way in. So Pro Tools First, hopefully we'll have the coverage here first. And lastly, there's this thing, TalkCenterAmerica.tv. I don't know if, Dan, you were traveling when that whole TalkCenter America TV show.
Yeah, no, I was, 38,000 feet, but sure, everyone sure is talking about it.
Well, there was a lot of us on this episode. It was Diane. Oh my gosh, last name slipping out of my head right now. One of our voice actor friends, Diane. Boom,
big Birdsall? Friend.
No, not Birdsall. Anyway,
Diana.
Sorry, Dan.
Diane Merritt. Diane. No. Oh, you know how many Dianes?
I don't have it in my notes. I don't know how I did this, but anyway, okay. I apologize. But she is the host of
Diane Talk Diamond.
Diamond. Diane. Sorry, D-I-M-O-N-D. No A in the middle. Anyway, Diane Diamond hosts the show every week, and it's a talk show, a little bit like ours, but it's very much driven by the viewers. So imagine a radio show, but with Skype. So every single person on the show is on Skype, on camera, and all of them are participating. And what's really, really cool about it is anybody at any time can join in. So you'll be on Voice Center America, TalkCenterAmerica.tv's page. You'll see the video window, and right below it, there's a Skype button. You click that, it'll launch Skype on your machine, patch you right into the show, and you'll be in the call queue. If you've ever called into a radio show, you know what it's like. You're on the phone and you hear the show going on your headphones. Well, here you see the show on your Skype window. It's really amazing. And then someone says, hey, what's your name? What do you want to talk about? Where are you? All this stuff. They screen you. And then if Diane wants to talk to you, she'll say, all right, we've got George Whittem in Santa Monica. And she'll hit a button on her own little controller and you're on the show. It is so cool. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the facilities in New York when I'm there next week. They are actually in the New York area, it's us. It would be like our show if we had a staff of five or six people and a couple $100,000 worth of equipment. I mean, it's amazing. Really cool.
So keep sending in those donations. The donation is right above George's head there.
Eventually Dan's studio up in Sherman Oaks is going to look like this place. Anyway, that was fun, but I was really glad to be a part of it and hope to guest on there again.
And that's a look at the Ewabs news.
Yes.
All righty. And now it's time for a Q&A. And if you have a question for us, feel free to drop it in the mail, the electronic mail thing, ewabshop@gmail.com. And we got a couple of interesting questions this week. I think I'll tackle the first one.
Cool.
Because I got this one this morning and it's like, can we use this on the show? And he's like, okay. Is there something I should be afraid of? Well, anyway, no, Bob Walker never. Asks, hi, I have an AudioBox 22 VSL and a Sennheiser MK4 microphone. Great.
Not a bad combo.
Great microphone. Up until now, I've been using the Phantom Power from the Pre to power the mic to get good levels. I have to turn the gain up fairly high on the audio box. A friend suggested that I get a Cloudlifter CL1 to boost the gain along with the external Phantom Power supply. His logic, which is totally faulty, is that a USB-powered box isn't providing true 48-volt Phantom Power anyway, and the CL1 will do a nice job boosting without cranking the gain on the 22 VSL. His solution will run me about $175 in purchases for both items, So is this on the right track? Should I look to get both the CL1 and an external Phantom Power, just an external Phantom Power, or should I just stick with using the 22 VSL to power my mic and turn up the gain to get a nice level? Thanks. Well, what I see here is not a total understanding of the entire audio chain. If you've got an interface, and what does he say he's using for the interface here? The
22 VSL.
The 22 VSL. That has phantom power on it, and anyone that says it doesn't have enough power on it doesn't know what they're talking about.
Well, there was a day when that might have been a problem 10 years
but
ago.
But that's not a problem.
We figured today. That out now.
Yeah, I'm glad somebody did. So no, you really don't need to do that. Now, George and I, we discuss this all the time. Do you really need an external preamp if you've got a good digital interface with a preamp in it? One of the reasons we like the Focusrite preamps. I mean, there's just so many out there on the market right now. Right. Truly, when you're using an external preamp and throwing it into a digital interface that also has a preamp, you should have plenty of room there because you're double amping your signal and making it far too loud and probably a lot louder than it really needs to be. So the fact that he's not getting a lot of level indicates a third problem, which is probably he doesn't have his levels set right in his operating system, whether he doesn't say whether he is a Mac or a PC person.
Yeah.
But it's important to make sure that you've got the faucet all the way open to take everything that the preamp and the interface is sending into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be the issue. It may have nothing to do with the other things here.
Well, I hear a lot of people say, why do I have to turn it up so loud? I'm like, well, that's how much gain that microphone requires with your voice.
Right.
So if you have to turn it up loud, it's just because you're not talking very loudly. You're not projecting very much. Your microphone's too far away. You know, your microphone is low output, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, if it sounds good, it is good. So
that's right.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. How many little colloquialisms can I throw in here? But if it's sounding fine, your noise floor is okay, your signal to noise ratio is okay, don't mess with it. You know, if you have, some people don't like having to use a lot of gain because then if they turn that gain knob just a little bit further, it jumps up a lot louder. I get that. So, you know, if that's the issue you're running into, you know, there's some validity to the suggestion, but it seems like if I was going to spend that much more money to just improve the audio box, I would invest all of that, I would just get rid of the audio box and buy a much better interface. You can buy the Forte now, the what is it called? The Focusrite Forte? I've been seeing now for $350, which would blow this audio box thing out of the water in terms of quality, gain, and everything. That would be the direction I would go. But you know what? We're just two guys that have tried a lot of things. This is one particular thing neither of us have actually tried. So,
well, I used to have a Firebox that I threw it. I thought I burned it up. You know, I suddenly plugged it in one day and smoke started pouring out of it. I'm like, all right, this thing's done. About a couple of weeks ago, like 4 years later, 5 years later, I drag it out of the drawer, plug it in. Son of a gun, it still works.
That's hilarious. So, hence the name. Hence the name Firebox. But, it's an interesting concept. You would think if it was so easy to add that much more clean gain, why wouldn't they just build it into the box? All right. And just have a button that you press and then it adds. Instead of a 20 dB pad, have the opposite, which is a 20 dB boost, you know? I think some preamps have it, but anyway. Yeah. Interesting idea. If you do try it, you do decide to spend the money, we'd love to hear the results. Send the audio in.
Right.
Steven Gonzalez, he says, I'm looking to purchase a dedicated analog to digital converter. Oh, kind of related questions tonight a little bit.
Sure.
I have a great mic and a great preamp, so I'm set there. Right now, my interface has a combo input. It's got a mic/instrument input.
They all do.
Pretty much all of them, yeah. So I still have to use the front knob to gain stage. I understand that a mic line input would be better. Or is there a plug-in and go directly to the analog digital converter without amping interface you would recommend? Well, that's a good question. We've talked about this topic a lot on the forum.
Ad nauseum.
Yeah, it's... There are very few just simple analog to digital converters that are just a USB. The vast majority of them, just like the Audio Box, the Scarlett 2i2 and all of its ilk, the M-Box series, all of these brands, they all have preamps built in. So if you run mic preamp in, you're going to two preamps. And it's all about gain staging. And yes, you have to run the input really low and all this stuff. That being said, I mean, I've used really inexpensive ones like the Lexicon Alpha, which is like a $60 interface. And I know Bo Weaver is using it. He still does to this day. Many of my voice clients who are promo voice actors are using this interface because it just works. Is it technically correct? Not really, because you're still going through another preamp circuit. But I'll go back to my old axiom. If it sounds good, it is good. So don't get too caught up in the minutiae of this stuff. If you really do want to take it to another level, get ready to spend some real money to get a much better AD converter without going through a preamp circuit. You got to go to at least like the ID22 or something like that. You know, you got to start spending the $600 range for an Apogee Duet or the ID22 or something like that. That's the level you need to go to start getting quality AD converters that you might possibly hear the difference. But, you know, it's an experiment that may not reveal much in terms of an improvement. So have fun with it, but don't overinvest in something like that.
Yeah. You know what we forgot to do?
What's that?
We forgot to tease who our guest is.
I know. So I feel terrible. That was all my fault.
We've been teasing him because we haven't teased him.
Exactly.
J. Michael Collins is going to be joining us from far, far away in about 10, 15 minutes. So we're going to talk about online casting and marketing and coaching and all sorts of cool stuff from his fascinating career and all the cool stuff that he does. So stay tuned for that. We've got a tip of the week coming up. Mugman cartoon at the very end of the show. This one's, again, really funny. So we don't want to miss that. Anyway, we got a lot more coming up. Do not go anywhere. We'll be right back here on East West Audio Body Shop. Stay where you are.
You're listening to East West Audio Body Shop.
We all agree that iTunes is one of the best ways to listen to music, right? Well, what if your voiceover demos could be presented the exact same way, where each clip inside your demo is listed as a clickable, playable track? Well, now you can, if your demo is presented with the interactive demo player only from VoiceXam. In VoiceXam, each track inside your demo is clearly titled for producers to view, select, and play. Now, we all know that producers will only listen to the first few tracks of your demos, right? But not on VoiceXam. With VoiceXam, producers can interact with your demo, clicking on what they want to hear. They'll stay longer, listening to all your voice work because they want to. Plus, with VoiceXam's exclusive Xamtistics, you'll know exactly what they listen to, when, and for how long. So why not give producers a chance to hear all your voice work with VoiceXam? Go to VoiceXam.com and sign up now. Plus, get an exclusive 45-day trial when you use the promo code EWABS.
VO Studio Tech. Recording made simple.
Hi, I'm Peter McHugh.
This is Jim Tasker from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, this is Bill Ratner in Los Angeles.
Hi, this is Scott Rummel here in Yorba Linda, California.
Hi, my name is Rick Wasserman.
Hi, this is Tom Kane.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Marshall.
Hi, my name is Zurich.
Hi, I'm Mary McKittrick.
Randy Thomas chiming in.
Hi, this is Joe Szymanski.
Hey, this is Rick Robles.
Hi, my name is John Patrick Armstrong.
I was turned on to George by none other than Don LaFontaine, who always swore by his health.
George is absolutely awesome.
ISDN, Source Connect, Phone Patch, FTP, you name it, Georgia set it up.
It's really the best thing I've ever done for myself. I feel free, safe, fearless, like anything is possible in here.
Unless you like to look for opportunities to waste time, call George.
And he did all of that, long distance over the phone and the internet.
I'm very happy with George, and I cherish him.
Thanks, George. You make it easy.
Et voilà, this is East West Audio Body Shop with Dan Leonard in the East and George Whittam in the West. Merci. Et maintenant, back to the show.
Ah, bonjour, bonjour. Hey, how's everybody doing there? East West Audio Body Shop, J. Michael Collins will be joining us in just a couple of minutes. I've been getting a lot of questions about Studio Suit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not making it anymore for the time being. Because I'm a full-time voice actor and a full-time board member at World Voices and a full-time consultant, I don't have time to be a manufacturer. So if you have Studio Suit, consider yourself the luckiest human being on the face of the voiceover planet. You know, when I get out to California, I will probably consider doing it custom.
Mm-hmm.
So we can like custom cut them for individual booths and stuff like that, because we just know the stuff works. And now that I know how to make it, and I don't want to, it's you know, you gotta have a really good sewing machine more than anything else. My wife has gone through 3 sewing. She's decided she wants to start recovering furniture. So she needed a sewing machine. I had an old one that didn't work. Then she bought one, a Singer, at a garage sale. That didn't work. Now she just bought one at Aldi for $80. Gee, I wonder how well that one's going to work. But I doubt it will do well with canvas. But anyway, tip of the week, since everybody's asking about that. This is an interesting one, because this is something I deal with all the time when I'm consulting with people and helping them set up their booths or their closets. And that has to do with shelves. And you wouldn't think that shelves have a big impact on your sound as a voice actor, but watch this and see.
I've seen it all. Home studios put in basements, attics, closets, and crawl spaces. The resourcefulness and innovation I see is inspiring. You want to find the most quiet space you can away from everyone else and the outside world. So you found your space. Now you have to make it sound right. But here's where people make mistakes. Just as much as putting the right things in there, putting in the wrong things, or how you arrange things, can make a difference between the perfect home studio or sounding like you're in a sewer. The biggest mistake I commonly come across is shelving, above and below. If you set up under a shelf, you've created a space that allows sound to bounce back to your mic several times, very fast. So many times, I've listened to people's audio samples where I can immediately tell that they're under a shelf, and I'll say, are you under a shelf or a low untreated ceiling? Give yourself plenty of clearance. That means don't be under a shelf, or if you have to be, treat it with sound dampening material. Setting up your mic on a shelf or desk? Bad. Why? A desk-mounted mic causes 2 problems. One, if the shelf or desk isn't dampened like the walls, it's the same as being under a shelf. You'll get rapid bounce back to your mic, causing bass reflex. And if you're loud enough, comb filtering, where things sound out of phase as you move your head. The other, and this surprises a lot of people, is that even with a shock mount, the vibration of your voice vibrates the shelf and transfers that noise to your mic. So, what do you do instead? If you have to use a shelf to read copy, try a wire shelf like one of those California closet shelves, or even better, the good old high school music stand. If you can't find one at a garage sale, you're not trying. So the best way to record in a booth or anywhere is to have a floor-mounted boom stand. Get it off of the desk or connected to anything except the floor. That's the best way to isolate your microphone from anything else. And it's the way to prevent any of these shelf-borne problems. So take this knowledge and just don't put it on a shelf. And that's my tip of the week.
It, you know, it never fails to amaze me how people don't understand that acoustics are 90% of the quality of your audio in your personal professional voiceover studio. So shelving is just one of those things that people just, they're like, what do you mean I'm under a shelf? It sounds like you're under a shelf, and I can tell. I can even tell how low it is. You know, that sort of thing. But our good friend Lee Penny has a question about this. He says, should I leave the hardwood floors? And I got to reverse this a little bit. Should I leave the hardwood floors in the new studio and treat the walls with studio suit? Well, him having one of the last two panels in existence, unless somebody wants to trade it for something else. The hardwood floors aren't really a problem, are they, George?
I don't think so.
I really don't get a lot of reflection off a hardwood floor.
Not really. It's probably one of the furthest points from your mic, unless you sit down at your microphone and it's right above the hardwood floor. But your microphone's generally going to be four to six feet off the floor. And so it's closer to the ceiling than it is the floor. So the floor is probably not one of the – floor is the last thing you really need to treat probably. But it's so easy to throw a little throw rug underneath that. It's, you know, it's rarely something you don't. I don't tell people, don't do it. You're going to ruin the sound. It usually doesn't hurt to have one. But if you're all hardwood floor, you won't know until you really set up the booth to tell if you need it or not.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the other big bugaboo, don't use a desk mounted mic.
The hard shelf of a desk or the hard surface of a desk right below a microphone, that is not too far off from having a shelf. It's just like the opposite, you know.
Right.
And a shelf above or a desk below, either way.
Right. And even if you've got like a shock mount on there, the reverberation off the hard surface still gets into the mic. And I've heard that many, many times. So important.
Yes, very important. But Ed Waldorf said in the chat room, when Dan analyzed my studio, he correctly noted the mic boom attached to the desk and an untreated desk and an untreated ceiling. He could tell by hearing it. That's right. I mean, we've heard these situations so many times that we'd start really. I always ask people, so what size whisper room are you in? And they're like, it's a 4x4. Oh, okay.
Well, there you go.
Steve Gonzalez says, what about a ceiling mounted mic? Ceiling being treated also.
Depends on the ceiling.
Yeah, it all depends on. I think it's really all about the distance between the mic and the ceiling. But even if the mount, it doesn't matter if the mic's mounted to the ceiling or mounted to a wall, mounted to a stand. It really does depend on what the mic is. The ceiling transmitting noise from the floor above? Is it a quiet surface? Is it an isolation booth where the ceiling is decoupled from the room above? If it is, go ahead. You can mount it on the ceiling.
If not,
then don't do it.
Then don't do that.
Mount the mic to the quietest, the surface that has the least amount of vibration. It's rarely a desktop. Desktops pick up vibration from obviously typing and hard drives and all sorts of stuff. So ceilings may work pretty well. Walls sometimes work pretty well. Just depends on your situation.
Yeah. Now, Bill Russell. come on now. Do wire shelves act like a spring verb sometimes? You mean like Mr. Microphone or the thing with the spring in it?
He's flicking. Boing.
Yeah, no. We're not talking like piano wire shelves here. We're talking, those things don't vibrate. If they're solidly, hooked onto the wall, they're not a problem.
They're pretty, beefy, the metal that those shelves are made out of. They don't really ring or resonate.
Yeah, but you do need to put some material to diffuse the sound on the bottom of a shelf if you're underneath it. That was the main point.
Yep.
Anyway, we ramble on and on when we have Mike Collins to ramble on and on in the next 45 minutes or so. He'll be joining us from far, far away. So stay tuned for that. We got lots more coming up here on East West Audio Body Shop. We'll be right back
after this live Harlan Hogan spot.
Oh, is it a live Harlan Hogan spot?
That's right.
Well, then perhaps I should go ahead and talk about Harlan Hogan.
Go for it.
You know, I just happened to have my Harlan Hogan headphones here with me. I talk about these a lot because people are like, are they really that much better? They're different. They're flat. And remember how I used to say that you really shouldn't listen to Pink Floyd on them? Well, guess what? I was listening to Pink Floyd on them. And actually, they weren't half bad.
I'm telling you, I mean, headphones are all about ear training. Whatever the headphones that you use, your ear has to learn them. Okay. They're all a little bit different. These are very different from a lot of the headphones because they don't hype up the top end. Like most of these headphones are very bright and sibilant and edgy, and Harlan's are not.
They have a flat, flat response.
Yeah.
They are true to the audio spectrum, to that 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz or 20 kilohertz. mm-hmm. those of you who are technically minded. And they're really, really good. They're designed for voiceover, though. And they are the Harlan Hogan Signature Series headphones. We got enough focus on that one, George?
Yeah.
Okay, good. And you can only get them one place. There's only one place on the face of the earth that you can purchase these amazing voiceover trained, designed for voiceover headphones, and that is over at voiceoveressentials.com.
Yeah, so get there via our website so he knows right. where you came from. Go to uabs.com. At the bottom, we have our little banner of advertisers. Click on Portabooth icon there, and it'll take you to voiceoveressentials.com. And you can grab his products there. He's a lot of custom products.
Right. Just check it all out. It's, you know, if you have a half hour to kill and you want to look at all sorts of cool stuff that he has there, along with all the books, go on over to voiceoveressentials.com and buy his stuff, mm-hmm. especially his signature series stuff like the headphones and the VO1A microphone and some of the other cool little things like the ABS, which I love to talk about because it is preventing this from falling over.
The adjustable boom strap.
It's lots of Velcro and straps, and it holds these things up.
That's right.
All right. So voiceoveressentials.com. If he doesn't have it, you don't probably need it.
That's right. We'll be right back.
Are you confused about how to set up and maintain a professional quality voiceover studio? No wonder. The information out there is mostly mythology. This is the best microphone to use. You have to have a preamp. You need a soundproof booth. This software is the best. Your audio must be broadcast quality. Consult with someone who knows the truth. Someone who's been there, in the trenches, doing voiceover for over 30 years. Someone with unparalleled experience with voiceover studios, who's worked with hundreds of voice actors and designed hundreds of personal studios. He knows how to teach and cares about your success in one of the harshest environments known to voiceover, your home. Dan Leonard, the Home Studio Master. Separate myth from fact and get a handle on your personal voiceover studio. Contact the Home Studio Master at homevoiceoverstudio.com. Drop off a specimen of your dry audio for a free analysis.
George and Dan. EWABs. They make our lives so much easier.
Oh, crap. What's wrong now?
We can fix that. We're back here at East West Audio Body Shop, and we'd like to welcome from way over on the other side of the big pond in possibly one of the tiniest countries on the face of the earth, where he says there's only 5 sidewalks. From Luxembourg, joining us is our good friend, J. Michael Collins.
Good evening, everybody. Pleasure to be here. And thank you very much, Dan and George, for having me tonight. And I do mean tonight because it is quite late here. So,
Well, thanks for staying up. But you say you stay on East Coast time.
I do. I have to. The client base kind of demands it, and sometimes I wind up being on West Coast time if I'm not careful. So, you know, bedtime can be, if I'm here in Europe in this studio, then bedtime is often well after midnight. So this isn't too far past that.
Well, that's good. We don't want to keep you up too long.
Not at all. It's worth it.
Yeah. Now, you're an interesting guy. Now, I remember you riding around. Yeah. I remember you riding around with us in a car in Anaheim. Over the summer, where we had it was almost like a frat party road trip. But you're an interesting guy, and as we said, you live in Luxembourg. Why would a nice all American guy like you live in Luxembourg?
Well, my wife took a job here about 7 years ago, and I'm from Washington, D.C. originally. And, you know, we keep a place there. I've got a studio there. We've got a studio here. But it went from being me spending half the time here to me spending 60% of the time here. And, you know, when your wife is somewhere and you're not there, you wind up spending most of your time there sooner rather than later. And so that's right. Why, you know, I tend to be back to the States about once a month. For one reason or another, but you know, she says I live in British Airways. But no, this has kind of become home. It's a happy little place. There's not really any crime. There's not really any poverty. It's different, but it's different. I think in a good way in many Of course, I miss my cheese fries back in the States. But other
than that. Yeah, you can make your own with all those interesting European cheeses they have.
It's not the same as melted cheddar. You just, you know.
It's a
real pleasure to be on with you guys tonight, though, and we want to talk a little bit. Obviously, a lot of you know me from seeing me on the top of the lists on voices.com and from online casting. And even though I had a long voiceover career before I did that, that seems to be where people know me from these days.
Tell us a little bit about how you got into voiceover, because you've had a pretty interesting career doing a bunch of things.
I did. I started in radio when I was 15. I believe I was the youngest business news talk show host in the U.S. At 15 on Bloomberg Information Radio. Doing an afternoon drive semi-talk show. We did about 30, 40 minutes of call-in and some interviews and then read a lot of copy off of the Bloomberg Wire. That turned into sports talk. And at the same time, I was doing VO for clients of both of those stations and started to pick up clients on my own. At that time I was recording going into studios. The home studio concept didn't really exist in the fashion that it does today. And, by the time I got out of college, it was a living. It wasn't a magnificent living at that time, but it was a living. And, it's what I decided to pursue. And, you know, as opposed to law school. And I think I got some funny looks from my family.
I'm sure you did.
it's turned out to be a reasonable decision. So. Here we are.
Yeah. Now, how long have you been doing this?
About 20 years now. Yeah, I would say I did my first paid voiceover in 1995. So.
Wow. So you're way ahead of the curve. So you've been doing it a good long time. But I mean, before it really, like at the dawn of the internet.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was, I guess, 95, 96. We were still in Prodigy and AOL at that point. So it's
hey, what should I say? My mother-in-law is still on AOL. Who on earth is still on AOL? Because they won't let her leave. That's
my mother doesn't even do email. So, you know, it's certain degrees, right?
Yeah. How did you start getting business, you know, before all this stuff that we have now that is so easy to, you know, get into the marketplace? Yeah,
same way everybody did, got some agents and developed my own business over time. I mean, I think, you know, one of the mythologies of the voiceover business is if you get agents, suddenly, you know, unicorns will come down from heaven and everything will be well. And I think that is something you guys have talked about a lot and other people who have been in this business for a long time discuss is that a lot of this is generating your own business. You know, 90% of voiceover success is who you are as an entrepreneur. And, you know, you're obviously talent comes into it and knowledge and technique come into it and technical ability come into it. But a lot of this is business building. That's what, you know, as a coach, that's one of the things that I teach is you can sound like Don LaFontaine or you can sound like Randy Thomas. And if you don't know how to run a business, you're only going to go so far.
Absolutely. So what were some of the first things you did? Now, how did you go about getting an agent then? You know,
same way everybody did it. You know, I had a demo produced and schlepped around until I found people to represent me. And, you know, that brought some work. That brought more work later on after I had established clients that I had developed on my own. But, you know, it's like anybody else, even back then, it was slow going. The first 5 or 10 years I was in this business, you know, I was eking out a living. And then after about 10 years, it started to become reasonable money. And then after about 15, I found the online casting sites and, in concert with developing the business that I had already built, those added more to it and have been a good source of revenue for me.
Well, let's talk about the online casting. Yeah. I think you and I have probably been, you know, we were some of the early adopters of getting involved in these because we've both been members probably since they started. What do you have any type of strategy that you use or do you find that since you've been on it a lot longer that you know how to use it? Is there really a secret to it from your point of view?
Well, there are a few different secrets to it. You know, and they're not secrets. It's simply knowledge that you accumulate after trial and error on these sites for a long period of time. I think if you go back and look at my feedback on voices.com, I think in the first 6 months I was on that site, I probably booked about 10 jobs. And that was with 15 years of experience coming into the business. Now, I wasn't as adept with the home studio stuff when I first started. So that plays into that as well. But, you know, I think you do bang your head against the wall a little bit, but eventually what you realize, number one, volume matters. I'm not talking about decibel levels. I'm talking about the amount of auditions that you do on these sites. It's really important. And part of that comes into, you know, understanding your competition, understanding who it is that you're going up against on these sites. And there's good news and bad news in that. The good news is I cast off of Voices and Voice 123 from time to time. When I listen to auditions on these sites, I can tell you that 40% of them disqualify themselves immediately for technical reasons. Either their acoustics are poor, they can't edit, there's a dog in the background, whatever it may be. And that's 5 or 10 seconds I listen to that, and that's gone. You know, another 40% disqualify themselves on talent issues. They haven't had the coaching, they haven't had the training, they haven't had the time, taken the time to actually build themselves into the artist that they should be in order to compete. So the good news is when you're on these sites, you see 100 auditions up there. You're not really competing against 100 people. You're competing probably against 15 or 20 serious pros for every job. That's the good news, but it's also the bad news because you're competing against 15 or 20 serious pros for every job. So there comes a point that you realize that your job is I use the Cheesecake Factory analogy. If you go to the Cheesecake Factory, look at the menu. You know, you've got 8,472 options, okay? And not everybody likes salmon, and not everybody likes steak, and not everybody likes cheesecake. Your job is to be on the menu. And as long as you're on the menu, you have a chance, but you're still only going to be chosen. The average professional talent who books consistently off of pay-to-play books about 5% of their auditions. At the very top, it's 7 to 10% on an average week. It doesn't get any better than that. So one of the biggest secrets is audition, audition, audition as much as is reasonable and as much fits who you are as a talent. The more ears that hear you, the better chance you have.
No question about it. What about the feedbacks, you know, that some people get on those sites? And you were just talking about how you're probably not competing against 100 people. It used to seem that way.
Right.
But now you get, you know, I think on Voice 123, you get some feedback saying you are number 2 out of 11, and 11 people got the same rating that you did. I'm still trying to figure that one out. But at least, you know, figuring that probably 100 people have sent things in there, or 50, that you know that at least you've been cut down to, you know, the top 10% of that.
Right. Well, the feedback that the two sites are different in the feedback that they offer. On voices.com for auditions, you get the thumbs up is basically the only feedback that you'll receive on your auditions. If you get a thumbs up, that's an indicator that you are most likely have been shortlisted. Your audition has been liked. I've even seen thumbs up withdrawn later once they cut the shortlist down to a smaller number of people, but that indicates that you did something right in the audition that the client was interested in. On Voice 123, it's a little bit more dynamic and specific. However, on Voice 123, fewer people actually bother leaving the feedback. But on that site, it's a 4-star system that you see on your auditions. If you're getting 3 and 4 stars with any frequency, you're doing fine. If you're getting 1 and 2 stars regularly, then you need to ask yourself what isn't connecting, because you also introduce the issue of SmartCast. If you're getting poor audition feedback on Voice 123, SmartCast will determine that you're not doing a very good job and will simply start to send you fewer auditions, which is why they tell you only go after the jobs that really are a good fit for you.
Oh, absolutely. And how many, how many auditions should you do a day? I mean, because like we're saying, there's like you're getting 40, 50 auditions a day out of a site like that. Certainly at Voice 123, voices.com, not quite as many, perhaps a little higher quality or you know, maybe just a little bit different from the stuff that you get at Voice 123. But how do you not overpower the system? Like they don't want you over auditioning on there.
Well, I, you know, over-auditioning is not a bad thing as long as you are, number one, being true to yourself, being true to your rates, okay? Right. You know, take a look at what's out there. Be honest with yourself about what you're a good fit for. You don't want to waste your time. You don't want to waste the person who's casting their time either. Voice 123, again, they'll penalize you if you audition for jobs that are not a good fit for you. But, I mean, the short answer is within reason, as many as you can. Again, there are jobs on these sites where the pay is not something that you're going to want to do. And so those are jobs that, that you just, you know, pass on. There's no reason to do an audition on a job that you don't want to get hired for. But, you know, within reason, look at the jobs that are a good fit for you, where the pay is reasonable, and do as many of those as you possibly can. The more ears that hear you, the more success you're going to have. And that's not just pay to play. That's agencies. That's every other part of the voiceover industry. The more people that hear you, the better off you're going to be.
Right. Especially if you're good.
If you're good, yeah. If you're terrible, then...
Usually you'll figure that out pretty quick. Although we've known people that we haven't figured that out very quick. Kind of scary. But there are some other issues with the pay-to-plays, too, because they all have different systems of relaying the payment from the client to the voice actor themselves. And one has a static system that you've got to go through it. And then they're changing things up and making, you know, they're satisfying their own corporate clients and auditioning. So they're half acting as agents and half acting as a you know, an online casting service. What are your thoughts on some of these differences?
Well, I'll address both those points. And, you know, the first one, talking about taking a percentage and also charging a membership fee. And we're talking about voices.com there.
No, okay. Fine.
For those of you who haven't been here before, here's my take on that issue, and I'll talk about the other issue in a second. But my take on that issue is you see many non-union agencies today are taking 15-20% cuts. It's not uncommon. And many non-union agencies today, and even some union agencies, are asking their talents to go out there and sign up for Model Wire. And pay, I don't know what the fee is there, $19 or $20 a month to be listed there. And it's this talent management casting online thing that they're doing that they want you to be a part of so they can track your stats and track what you do more easily. So my question is this. I mean, to me, it's not a big deal. As long as I'm making money off the site, it's not a big deal. Because as far as I'm concerned, if I pay voices.com $369 a year if you're a premium member, 10% off the top for the first job that you do with that client. You get what? Like you said, Dan, 50 or 60 auditions a day sometimes off the site. I think 30 or 40 is more typical. That's 200 a week, 800 a month, 9,600 a year, right? Now, you're not going to do all of those, but let's say conservatively you do 3,000 a year. The agent is charging 15 or 20% and making you possibly, not always, but possibly pay this additional monthly fee, is sending you what? If you're in their good graces, 20 auditions a month? To me, it's not an issue to get worked up about. I understand why some people are not thrilled with the idea, and because that's not the way that things have always been done. But these companies exist to be profitable. That's what they're there for. Our job as talent is to use them so that we can be profitable. If that no longer serves our purposes, so be it. But for the moment, for myself and for a lot of other talents out there, these sites work very well for us. The other item that you addressed, which is the taking in of corporate clients and managing the jobs. Obviously we've seen jobs pop up on certain sites that have higher budgets on one site than they do on the other site. That's something that I think in the long term, hopefully they will address by adding those fees on top of whatever the talent budget is, and not actually taking those out of the original talent budget. Obviously, that would be the best of both worlds for us and for them. Again, companies are profit-driven. That's what they exist for. If the rate is still fair, I'll audition for that job. If I see it on two sites, I'll audition for the job on the site where the pay is higher. I will say one thing about the people, the professional services people at voices.com that not a lot of people know. And that is that long term, for the betterment of us as talent, and I know that's a funny thing for a lot of people to hear coming from the talent side, what they are doing that nobody else in the industry is doing, whatever their other business practices may be, is this is a team of people who are dedicated to cold calling on a daily basis businesses that do not currently use voiceover. They find a corporation that has web videos up but no voice. They give them a call. Wouldn't that sound better with a professional voiceover on it? They create jobs where none existed before. Now, nobody else, as far as I know in this business, is doing that for talent. And it's a small operation at the moment. They've got 20 or so people doing this. It's growing. They're making their money off of it, obviously. We're making our money off of it as we can. But in the long term, the success of that kind of an enterprise, to me, I think is beneficial, because what we will have is this group of people, 20, 50, 100 people out there, cold calling and generating jobs where none existed before. This is the state of the industry now. At the top, we all know it's been coming down for a long time. You know, national rates for broadcast are not what they were 10 years ago or 20 years ago, except in very, very small circles. But what is happening is the middle is growing. The voiceover industry is the only business right now that where the middle class among us are growing. You know, the jobs between $300 and $750, those jobs are metastasizing. They're growing rapidly. And we're seeing that expansion because of new media. We're seeing it because, you know, the online sites are part of that growth. And it's growing corporate narration, e-learning, medical narration, you name it. It's getting bigger and bigger. So, you know, the industry is evolving. It's changing. It's going to shake out eventually. But my point is, I don't think it's a question of good or bad or wrong or right. I think it's a question of business. And we're all in this to do what we can as business people to further our businesses and to develop who we are, you know, as voice talent.
Right. And the online casting services are just one tool in your toolkit of marketing.
Absolutely. One small, yeah, and they should not be, I think they should never be more than 25 or 30% of anybody's business in voiceover. Obviously, going out and trying to get representation is important. Even more so, generating your own business is tremendously important. Word of mouth among your colleagues, creating a good reputation for yourself, being known as someone who is reliable, who provides quality, who does it quickly and who does it right the first time. That's how you build a business. So all of these things are tools in our toolboxes, and they should be used as such.
Absolutely. Now, you do a little bit of coaching, too. Now, what are some of the things that you teach, or some of the things that you see that people are really making mistakes on? And when you're coaching them, what are you seeing the biggest mistakes people are making?
Well, I think I'll approach it from maybe a little bit of a different perspective, which is that I think every talent is different. You know, I don't hear the same mistake repeated over and over again from the people that I coach. I think one of the things that I do hear consistently, is a little bit of a hesitancy to let yourself go, to be energetic, to really get into a read and to be interested and invested in the copy that you are involved with. One of the things I always tell people is that I've never in my life done a read as J. Michael Collins. Every time I do a read, I'm building a character, even if it's for something. I got hired recently to do a commercial for that was played in NHL arenas for Jack Link's beef jerky. And, you know, I asked, what do you want this to sound like? And they said, we want you to sound like a hockey announcer. I said, yeah, I woke up when I was 13 sounding like a hockey announcer. So what do? I came up with this kind of crazy CBC character in my head, you know, and instead of being J. Michael Collins, I was suddenly hockey arena announcer man. You know, it was this big over the top thing, and it worked. I do medical narration for surgeons, where I've been told that the average salary in the room is about $800,000 a year, and I have to sound smarter than these guys, you know. So, and I'm not smarter than these guys. So, what do I do? I come up with a character. I'm a teaching professor at Harvard Medical, and I inhabit that. And it's a little arrogant. It's a little Dr. House, but at the same time, it's something that they can identify with, and it's competent. I think if you do that every time you address a script. And you have to do it quickly. Obviously, you know, even these days with agency work, that comes in an email. You have to turn that around fast, just like you do an online casting audition. This is the ADD world of voiceover. We all know that. But if you take the time to sit there and quickly develop that character, look at the copy, look at the target audience, who are you talking to, you know, and have a conversation with that person. Don't read it. Don't be an announcer. You know, and I'm the original announcer. Okay. That was my voice back in the day. It was radio, radio, radio. We can't do that anymore. It's not what's popular unless it's satire, unless it's parody. We have to make you believe, that we're talking to you and not at you.
Yeah. And you have to learn it.
You do have to learn it.
Definitely a skill you have to learn. Now you've been doing a few, you've been running around and doing lectures and doing webinars and stuff. You're going to be at VoiceOver Atlanta, are you not?
I am going to be at VoiceOver Atlanta. I'm looking forward to it and very grateful to Gerald for having me there. I'll be doing a breakout session on the Friday morning where I'll be doing kind of a broader version of my online course for success in online casting that will be hitting all of the high points of pay-to-play success, including profile building, auditioning, pricing strategies, and then additional strategies for each individual site. And then on the Saturday morning, I'll be doing an X session where I will be, it's limited to 15 participants, and I'll be going over their profiles personally with them, reviewing those. And then we're going to do reads. We're going to do reads based on actual jobs off the sites and try to improve. You know, the auditioning technique for online casting is a little bit different than it is for your agents or for clients that you have established relationships with, in that, again, this is the ADD world. You've got to be quick. You've got to get in volume. So you have to be able to do it competently while at the same time doing it efficiently. You know, I always tell people, if your agent sends you an audition, for the love of God, sit down and, you know, take 10 or 15 minutes and make sure it's a beautiful thing when you send it off. If you're auditioning for a $300 job on an online casting site, you don't have 15 or 20 minutes to do that audition. You need to bang it out and move on to the next one.
Absolutely. Now, this will be your second time at VoiceOver Atlanta?
First time at VoiceOver Atlanta. And I'll also be going back to the Midwest VoiceOver Conference in Columbus, Ohio in early May, the 7th, 8th, and 9th. And that'll be my third time there. Which will be a blast. It's run by Ron Allen and James Minter, a couple of great guys from Columbus, and looking forward to that as well, very much so.
All righty. All right, well, we got a pile of questions coming in from our wonderful audience. I think you just actually did the spot for VoiceOver Atlanta there, George. But I don't know if we have any copy for it this week.
No, I think the fact that Jay Michael is going to be there and spoke so well of it pretty much says a lot. So if you have any plans at all of going, if you're trying to be swayed or pushed over the hill, whatever that decision that you're trying to make is to go to the Voice Atlanta conference this year, that should be a little extra push for some of you. But yeah, I'll be there too.
Fantastic, you bet.
I'll be there too. We've got Cliff is going to be there. Cliff Zellman. We've got Uncle Roy Hokelson.
I mean, oh, that'll be a lot of fun.
It's going to be an amazing experience. Looking forward to it.
I wish I could be there, but
could be there, Dan. Come on down.
I know. It's,
you're scared of that warm weather.
Yeah, that's the first thing I want to do is, you know, I want to stay here where there's 3.5 feet of snow. Go to Atlanta. It's always great going to Atlanta that time of year because you get on, there's freezing rain or it's snow, and you know, when you're getting on the plane and you get off, it's warm here. Let's party.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, go over to VoiceOver Atlanta.
I can plug the hotel too. I've actually stayed there before at that Hilton. And it's a nice property. So I'm looking forward to visiting it again.
VoiceOverAtlanta.me.
Not dot you, dot me.
Dot me. That's right.
Dot me. All righty. All right. Well, let's get into, let's see here. We've got to get into some questions here from our amazing audience.
I'm sure I've stirred the hornet's nest.
Well, I can hear Doug Turkel's head actually exploding there. That was that loud popping sound coming all the way from Florida. Deb Irwin asks, this is kind of a personal question, I guess, but it's if you're willing to discuss this part, what level of membership are you on voices.com? Because they have different levels of membership there.
I'm a platinum member on voices.com, which is their $2,500 a year level, and they limit that, I believe, to 100 talent.
So they say. All right. And you have found that to help you out a little bit?
I do. At the end of the day, what Platinum does for you, it's really, I mean, they attach a lot of bells and whistles, but it really has one primary function, which is that it gives you priority in the search listings. What I always tell people about Platinum on voices.com is if you are already a working professional and you're consistently booking a job a week on the site, then it's worth considering because you may see ROI from it based on the quality of your demos, the fact that people will find you higher in search, you'll get more private invites and direct bookings. If you aren't booking a lot on the site already, might not be the time to go for it yet.
Mr. Whittem, your witness.
I'm next. Bev Standing asked a question, but it was about how much time you spend on P2P auditioning daily, and you already covered that, so I don't think you need to rehash that again. Stephen Gonzalez says, a question for J. Michael Online. Oh, wait, that's not one word. Question for J. Michael.
For online casting.
Online casting for 5 to 7% versus other marketing processes. How much time for each per week? I think you said about a third you spend on.
If you spend about a third on all of your effort, I mean, if online casting is part of your marketing plan, part of what you do, the nice thing about it is they are presenting active jobs to you. That's there. That's not stuff that you have to chase. Marketing is fantastic if you have the time to do it. I certainly encourage you to do it. Go out there and, whether that's contacting production companies, whether that is, and be tactful about that. You have to be careful about how you do that. But, if it's something a lot of people have been having success lately with is contacting e-learning and medical narration companies and trying to get on their roster directly. Those types of organizations, because they aren't quite as saturated as your traditional commercial companies are, can be a little bit more receptive. Bill DeWeese, great guy. If you ever go look at his stuff, he's the king of all things marketing. I've never seen someone with such a comprehensive array of different strategies and up to and including things like Craigslist. So, there's work out there in all sorts of places. I think as long as you are making a reasonable effort to charge reasonable rates, it doesn't matter where you go, but do it. Take the time to do it. It's certainly a positive thing for your career.
All right. Deborah asks, and this is something I always ask myself too, because I don't like the fact that these places are an auction or that you're acting like a paving contractor for some of these things, because we're all sort of different. But how do you price yourself? Bidding within their budget or pushing for better or higher rates?
Well, the first part of your comment there about the auction process, I agree with that. I think I'd be a lot happier if the rates were simply static and were simply set. And the idea of the bidding process to me, it's not a terribly beneficial thing. But we have to do it. And so as long as we have to do it, general in a vacuum advice, assuming that all things are equal, that the pay is reasonable for the amount of work and the usage. And again, the word count is appropriate and so on and so forth, is to be in the middle. The middle is good for a couple of reasons. If you're at the low end, if you come in at the very low number, or even if you undercut it, which is possible on these sites, if you go to the grocery store and you walk up to the meat counter, and they have a big sign that says discount meat. What's your first thought? Something smells funny, right?
check the expiration date.
Exactly. this is no different, okay? I mean, if you go to a used car lot and you see the one that's on 50%, you wonder what's wrong with the car. So if you're underbidding, if you're going low every time, it's going to raise as many red flags as it does create interest. Can you make money by lowballing on these sites? Absolutely. Are those the clients that you're going to want? No, they're going to be the hardest to deal with, and they're going to be the most demanding, and they're going to want to pay you nothing for your time. So going on the low end is not going to be a positive thing for your career. At the same time, if you're going to the max number every single time, again, unless the budget justifies it, okay, there are times I go above the max number. One of the best clients I ever booked on voices.com, I went 1500 over their max number, and I got it. But unless there's a justification for it, if you are middle or high middle, somebody out there comes in with an A-minus read on a 250 or an A-plus read, I should say, on a $250 to $500 job, they've got a great read, it's the best of the bunch, and they bid 500. And, I come in with an A-minus and Dan comes in with an A-minus and Ziffer comes in with an A-minus. And we're at 375, 410, 425. Well, the economy is getting better, but people are going to save themselves $75, $100 when they can get something that's pretty good, because our A-minus reads are still pretty decent. And you may have bid yourself out of that job. So even, I know Voices did some research on this, and they showed that the middle range was the best place to go. That's been my experience as well. And I think a lot of the other people who have success on these sites will tell you the same thing.
Wow, that's good advice. I mean, absolutely. People need to heed that, because you've got a lot of experience on there. Diana Birdsall, great question. Hi, Diana. What percentage of auditions does Michael send his demo in versus where you have to do a custom audition?
Very, very few. To the point where I'm almost not doing it at all anymore. There are some jobs where they will request the pre-recorded demo. That's fine. That's what it's there for. But in terms of jobs that are looking for actual copy being read, 1%, 2%, and that's usually only if I'm in an airport lounge having a gin and tonic. So. Right.
And sometimes they'll just say, we're not taking custom demos. It's just like, we don't know what we want. Let me listen to some demos.
Right.
In which case, you just send those in like that.
Can you explain? I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm not clicking about what you're meaning. So when you say a custom demo, how is that different from an audition?
A custom demo is an audition.
Okay. A custom demo is an audition. Gotcha. So you find yourself rarely ever doing those, or almost always doing those?
I thought the question was how often do you send in a pre-recorded demo?
Right, your actual recorded demo that you have on your site, as opposed to taking a custom script that's being sent and recording that.
95-98% of the time, it's a audition that you record based on the copy that the client has listed for you.
Sure. I mean, yeah, like you said, if you just want to get something in and you're not even close to your studio, then you might send in your pre-recorded demo.
Maybe. And that will get round filed pretty darn quick.
Pretty quickly.
Although it's amazing when you go on there and you see an audition and suddenly, it's like, ooh, there's zero. Oh, suddenly there's 10. Well, 10 people sent in their demo and not their custom audition or something, which I complained about a few times.
You'd be surprised, though, because it's people are pretty quick on the trigger. And I've always said that, if you talk to the people who book the most work on these sites, our average audition time start to finish is probably 3 to 5 minutes. So if you're looking after 90 seconds and you see 10, it's probably a lot of custom demos. But if you're looking 5 or 10 minutes later, you'd be surprised.
Yeah, it does grow pretty quick. Steve Gonzalez asks, do you have a specific day, amazing, for pay to play all day, or a specific time every day, or a flexible schedule depending on factors like number of emails from the online casting sites?
Well, I'm in the studio full time. So what I do is, my process usually in the morning, first thing I do is clear out my email inbox, not the auditions. Those I look at later. I'm talking about client emails that have come in overnight or early in the morning. Work on any client projects that I have first that need to be done on a deadline. Then I look at, if I have agency auditions, I'll do those. If I have clients asking me for auditions for jobs that they have, I'll do those. Then usually pay to play is the next thing I look at, the outstanding auditions. Now, typically, because I do keep, even if I'm here in Europe, I do keep East Coast hours. Usually when I wake up, there aren't many pay to play auditions left in my box. So what I'll do is, as I'm working throughout the day, I have my email inbox open and I'm watching them as they come in. And every time one comes in, unless I'm on a live session, if one comes in, I'll click on it and take a look. And just first thing I really look at is budget. And if it's under $250, I won't stop what I'm doing to go take a look at it. If it's $250 plus, depending on what I'm doing, I might take a moment to go do a quick read. If I'm quite busy, then that number goes up. Then it might be $500 plus or $1,000 plus, depending on what I've got on my plate. But I do, generally speaking, keep the email inbox open and try to hit them as they're coming in whenever possible. If that's not possible, do triage. You know, whenever, if you're sitting there, look, I did this. I just went on a vacation for this past weekend. Didn't audition Thursday, didn't audition Friday for anything. Come back Monday and, you know, there are probably 120, 130 waiting for me just on pay to play. So first thing I did, because I don't have time to do that many auditions on any day. I went through anything under 250, got the chop immediately. Then really anything with over 40 or 50 submissions got the chop. And then I took a look at the remaining jobs and wound up probably reading for about half of them. So do triage. Look at the ones that are most likely to give you return on investment. Do those and don't waste your time, especially if you're saturated with invitations on the one, you know, on a $150 job that's got 85 reads on it already. Why?
Absolutely. Although sometimes it's amazing. You think, well, maybe, you know, maybe there are 85 really crappy auditions. And amazingly, sometimes you'll like, whatever. Or if it interests you, if it's right. a subject matter that's like, hey, I know this stuff pretty well. I can probably do that. Deb Irwin asks, lady has a lot of questions.
Hi again, Deb.
She's listening carefully. She's had a busy day. Do you spend any time editing your auditions if you're only spending 3 to 5 minutes, or are you just sending them raw?
No, they're edited. You know, I will obviously any mouth noise that's readily apparent, any breaths that don't belong, you know, with some license. Sometimes I chop them all. Sometimes I don't. Depends on what kind of read it is. My philosophy on this is kind of based on who the clients are on pay-to-play sites. This is a different breed than the old-fashioned world of voiceover. Okay, 50% of these people are having, in one manner or the other, their very first encounter with hiring voice talent. And the difference between them and your agent is that these people don't know necessarily what raw audio is. So if you send them something that is completely raw signal, unless you just got an absolutely brilliant setup, they're going to say, well, this doesn't sound like what I hear on TV or on the radio, and you're going to be behind the eight ball. So do some basic editing, okay? It doesn't have to be, I mean, Georgia's got stacks if you're on Twisted Wave, and that's one press. So it doesn't have to be 8,000 different steps. But clean it up. Make it sound like it's something that is more or less ready for air, and that'll be a big advantage to you.
That's what I tell my clients. I think you really need to be sending out something these days that the casting person or the business owner, which is probably more common, is going to say, hey, that sounds like that really was on the radio. That's the one I want. That's it. I don't think they have the imagination. Absolutely. They have to hear it the way it's going to really sound.
Really?
So I guess that kind of answers the question that I was going to ask, which really is, do you process your auditions? Because clearly you are using some processing. What software do you work in? And tell us a little bit more about your signal flow, your studio. What do you use in your studio?
My studio, I've got mirrored studios, actually, so I try and keep the same signal chain in both of them. Mm-hmm. So everything sounds alike when I go to do any kind of edits or changes. So I'm on primarily a 416 into a 737.
And it's an Avalon for those under 37.
And then I'm actually recording. I found a fairly simple program that I love. I used to try to do the Pro Tools thing and found it like killing an ant with a hammer. So I'm on WavePad Pro, which I find to be about the easiest thing in the world for Windows.
Oh, yeah.
It works very, very well for me, especially when I'm on the road doing auditions and I don't want anything much more complicated. Throw some plugins in there as necessary, and do a little front end if I have to. But it's, you know, the one thing that is important, I talked about having mirrored signal chains, I'm sure you guys have addressed this before, is consistency in your sound, especially for regular clients. If you find yourself on the road, if you find yourself, and I try not to record on the road much anymore, but if you find yourself in a different environment, is being able to match what you did before, which is one of the reasons that I do that.
Right. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, the WavePad Pro sounds to me like the Twisted Wave for Windows.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Does it let you do little things like, can you line up more than one processing plugin? Like, can you go, I want a high-pass filter and a little compression, da, 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 and then like load that as a one-step process, or do you have to do each of them one by one?
It does, but it's tricky about which plugins it will let you do that with.
Yeah.
So what I typically find myself doing, unfortunately, is doing it manually.
Gotcha.
But, you know, again, it's muscle memory. After you've done it long enough, it's pretty quick.
Can you do keyboard shortcuts or hotkeys or anything like that?
I'm not that sophisticated. I'm on a mouse.
So you're saying that you could actually be faster. Listen to what he's saying. You might actually be faster than him if you use other software with keyboard shortcuts and things like that. So
it's entirely possible.
But it works for you, and that's the most important thing.
Exactly.
Amen.
All righty. All right, one more question here. From Steve Gonzalez, lift percentage for auditions. You know, when the audition is lifted for the real job, do you have any idea how often that happens for you or for other people?
By lift, what do you mean, being stolen?
No. It means when you record the audition, and that's what they use. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Make something up.
Yeah. I mean, 5% or less probably.
Yeah.
It's usually stuff gets re-recorded. Well, J. Michael Collins, thank you for staying up really late for us.
My pleasure.
And joining us from Luxembourg. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Always fun to run into you wherever we are, and whether it's in Canada or in California or some other place that starts with a C.
There you go.
We'll be glad to have you on again. This is great stuff, and people are just, you know, digging what you're having to say about it, because this is really the meat and potato stuff about what I think most people do in the voiceover business, especially dealing with stuff online. And we really appreciate you coming in and sharing your deep depth of knowledge.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Thank you very, very much for having me, and I'd be happy to be back anytime and to buy you guys a drink the next time I see you.
That'll be two drinks. Thank you.
Anyway,
thanks for being with us tonight.
You bet.
All righty.
Good night, Jim.
Well, that's not all for tonight. We've still got a little bit left. We've got a few announcements to let you know what's going on, and a Mugman cartoon. So don't go away. We'll be right back here on East West Audio Body Shop.
VoiceOver Extra, the voiceover industry's online news, education, and resource center 24/7. Hundreds, probably thousands of free how-to articles for voiceover success, ranging from home studio to voice acting to business. A free voiceover industry directory, calendar of industry events, resource links, a store, and much more. Bi-monthly webinars on all topics of voiceover, free subscriptions to newsletters, reports, announcements, daily news, and features at voiceoverextra.com.
And now back to the only webcast done with two cans, two geeks, and a string. East West Audio Body Shop, with George Winham on his end in the West and Dan Leonard in the East.
This is East West Audio Body Shop with Dan Leonard in the East and George Winham in the West. Now back to Dan and George.
Don't touch that dial. Seriously, stay with us, please. Dan and George will be right back.
As a matter of fact, we're back now. All righty. Boy, he was great.
Yeah.
Never a lack for words.
Voice actors make great guests because they always
certainly
have
do.
To say.
It's the secret to the success of our show. Anyway, first off, we'd like to, what do we have some upcoming shows? Next week. Some very, very close friends of mine, people who are wonderful. They are the salt of the earth people. They are the type of people you want to be friends with, and because they can teach you a lot about the voiceover business. Brian and Rosie Amador will be with us on East West Audio.
Just booked it today. Just got the word from Catherine on that.
And two wonderful people, and they know a lot about the bilingual market. And so if some of you are interested in that sort of thing, You have to tune in to hear what they have to say. But they also have a band.
Yeah, it's great. They need to join the Voiceover Rockstars group.
Yes,
there's a Facebook Rockstars group or something.
I think they actually were for, but Sol Canto is the name of their band, and it's just wonderful stuff. We don't have everybody on for March 2nd yet, but on March 9th, you do not want to miss this. Because you got to be here 6 hours earlier, because there's so many people in the world that don't get to hear the show or watch the show because there were J. Michael Collins's. They're in Europe, or they're in Australia, or any one of those places. We're going to do an international voiceover roundtable, and it's going to be at noon Pacific time on March 9th. And that's going to be a lot of fun. We've got people from all over the world. We actually do it. We have Susanna Kenton who's going to be with us from New Zealand, somebody we both know and both admire a whole lot.
Fantastic. Great gal.
And a few other people. Ramesh Mitani supposedly will try and join us if he has the bandwidth from the Canary Islands and a few others. So that's going to be really interesting because we're going to be talking to the four corners of the globe. And that's going to be at 3 p.m. Eastern time, noon Pacific on March 9th. Let's see. Thank our donors this week. Who do we have this week?
We have a whole host of donors. Some of these names are going to start sounding familiar to you folks because they are subscribers. So yes. We're reading their names every single month. Well, some
because
of them more
we
so.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Eric Aragone, every week he donates. Jeffrey Scott Chambers, C3M Productions, Jack DeGolia, Brian Rausch, Elizabeth Stewart, Graham Spicer, Leslie Diamond, and Andrew Kaufman all donated. And I believe every one of those are subscribers that donate every month or more often than that. In some cases
we're more often than that, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And you can, and if you can help us out, you know, it's not free to do this show. We have to pay for the bandwidth and a lot of other things like equipment.
We're building a studio, folks.
Yeah.
When Dan moves out here, we are building a studio.
Yeah, it's going to really be something. So if you would like to donate to the show, if you find that we give you value every week, just go right above George's head there, and it says donate. Very simple, donate. It's actually over George's head. You can click on that, and that's always a big help.
Also, up there at the top of the page, there's the show logs link somewhere.
Oh,
up
absolutely.
There. And
don't miss those.
Yeah, Jack DeGolia does our show logs every week. He's very meticulous about it, and he time indexes these things. So if you're trying to find a specific topic, you can find it very quickly that way, because when you click on the time, it jumps right to it in YouTube. Really cool. And you can search for it. It's a little wonky, but you can actually search for topics in the show notes or in the logs. Very cool.
That's true. Narrator helper.
Narrator
that's
helper.
Your department. That's right. Your department.
That's we put that in there because that's my way of thanking my wife for letting me do the show every week. And that's what she does. And one of many things that my wife does, she's a talented photographer, but she also does audiobook proofing, editing, mastering, and is getting pretty good at it. She really has it down. She's a meticulous ear and a really good workflow. You will find it a very efficient workflow, and she's great at hitting deadlines. So check her out at narratorhelper.com.
She does know what she's doing. Let's see here. We talked about the show logs, YouTube channel, all 178 episodes, including last week's, is on YouTube. So if you missed one and you want to find out where things were, go to the show logs and you'll find exactly where something interesting is. You might read what's in the show log and then hear the actual human that was on the show speak it. Gives it a whole lot more meaning, I guess.
Yeah, actually, I've been meaning to ask my friend sitting over next to me right now. I've got Alex sitting here in the studio. Alex, how many episodes have you seen?
Three.
Hey, that's not bad. That's a pretty good start.
Only 175 to go to catch up.
Which ones have you watched? Do you remember who the guests were?
No.
No? One of them was the guy who plays SpongeBob, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But thanks for coming. He's been hanging out because he just wanted to see what it was like. Did you have a good time?
Yes.
Awesome. Not a voice actor, but, you know.
Yet.
Good kid. You don't have to tell him to stop talking. That's nice.
Well, that's good to know. Please like us on Facebook. You're all there on Facebook. You all get the invitations every week, so we know about that.
Right.
But we do need to thank our sponsors once again. Harlan Hogan over at voiceoveressentials.com, VoiceOver Extra, Edge Studio, VoiceZam. Hey, you get a 45-day free trial at that with the code, as I recall.
The code.
And the code. The code. VoiceZam. That's a unique way to display your voiceover demo on your site and a lot of other places. And there's some other cool things with it too. And VoiceOver Atlanta providing an uninterrupted live stream and bandwidth. All of these fine sponsors helping us out. So patronize them because they're helping us out as well. We'd like to thank our wives. You already did thank your wife, but you can thank her again if you want. I have to thank Marcy because, my God, she puts up with this every single week.
And wait till we move the studio into your house.
And there's no bathroom in the garage. So we got to figure out what we're going to do. We're thinking maybe just digging a latrine out there.
Big toilet.
Yeah, there you go. That'll be different. But also, we'd like to thank Kathy Curran, our wonderful producer, who got us great guests. Got us J. Michael Collins. Guy knew what he was talking about. Anthony Gettig for doing a fabulous job in the chat room tonight. And Shelly Avellino, when they seem to alternate week to week. Jack DeGoli again, of course, for the show logs, which are fabulous. Tim McKean for EWAB's Essentials, which are starting to pile up. Short little tidbits. Go on to YouTube and find those. And Lee Pinney, who I had lunch last week at the Pancake House, and for all the stuff that he does, especially with the podcasts and stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. Everybody's been asking for more Mugman, like cowbell, more cowbell. They also want more Mugman. So we're going to leave you tonight and say goodnight and leave you with a Mugman episode that you're going to love because it's only 4 minutes long. I mean, where are you going to go? What else were you planning on doing? But see the creativity that goes into these. Anyway, I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are East-West Audio Body Shop. Good night, everybody.
Take care, everyone.
I cannot miss this.
I ended up writing a lot of this.
Weird. I should be asleep by now. Oh well. How am I not asleep by now? You know, maybe I need a snack.
I thought you were going to bed early.
Let's see what we got here. Granola bars. These don't taste like the normal granola bars. Oh well. Wait a minute. What? Caffeine and 500 grams of protein? This is Tiana food. I'm never gonna fall asleep after eating this. You know, maybe a boring documentary will put me to sleep.
The cassowaries are ratites in the genus Cassarius and are native to the tropical forests of New Guinea, its nearby islands, and northeastern Australia. Cassowaries feed mainly on fruit, although all species are truly omnivorous and will take a range of other plant food including shoots, grass seeds, and fungi. Very shy, but when provoked, they are capable of... So the next time you see a cassowary, keep your distance.
Oh no, the documentary was actually interesting! How late is it?
Mugman, you're talking to yourself out loud again. I could hear you through the walls.
Oh, Deanna, I ate some of your protein bars. Now I'm full of caffeine. Then I tried to watch a really boring documentary and I got sucked into it. Now it's midnight and I don't know what to do. And I don't want to miss...
Whoa. Slow down. What's the problem?
I can't sleep, Deanna. What do I do?
I figured. Try counting sheep or something?
Sheep? Just count sheep. Yes. Okay, I'll just go into bed and count the sheep. Yes, sheep.
Good night.
One, two, three, four, five, six, 48, 49, 50, 217, 218, 219, 220, 221, 222, 200...
This ain't working. Wake them up, boys.
Maybe I should just take a walk. The wizard!
Oh, not this kid again.
Please, do something to help me fall asleep.
Have you tried warm milk? Here.
How am I supposed to drink this? Ah! Huh, looks like everyone's having trouble sleeping.
Yeah, we've noticed.
Wait a minute.